I'm Alan McClellan. I'm here with Thomas Wilkins, who is the newly appointed Artistic Advisor for Education and Community Engagement at the BSO. That's quite a mouthful.
Right, exactly. And that's just half my title. So, yeah.
That's amazing. So what does this change mean for the Boston Symphony?
I think because of the way that we were doing the children's programs, the young people's concerts here, the importance that we had attached to it, both on the stage and off the stage, the minute that we started talking about really adopting community, and I say adopting with in quotations, but becoming partners with and more engaged with communities around our city, that they felt that there was a need to have sort of for lack of a better term, a guiding force or just a person who can sort of help shepherd all of us into this new endeavor. And so we almost don't have a specific job description other than let's just go forward now and see how many different ways we can touch lives in our city.
It's an amazing opportunity. It's not always taken up, and so this is an effort by the BSO to really take it up even more than in the past.
Yeah, I think here's the thing that I've said to people about the BSO is that this has long been one of the quintessential examples of excellence in classical music and music period, really across the globe. And what they are demonstrating with this is that they believe in the transformative power of that music that they have been delivering in limited fashion across the globe. And therefore, since we believe this, it's upon us now, the necessity, the need, to make sure that as many people have access to that life-altering thing called music as possible.
And what about you personally? How does it change your life, and does it fulfill more some things that you've been wanting to do?
Yeah, you know, it does, only because this is something that I have believed all of my life. I was a kid, as many people already know my story, but born to a single mother on welfare in a housing project in Norfolk, Virginia, heard a symphony orchestra concert at the age of 8 and knew at that moment that I wanted to be a conductor. And so I'm sort of the poster child for the value of having an involved, engaged orchestra in a community, and the poster child for the importance of arts education for young people. And so I have always come at this from a different perspective, I guess. I was never, ever trying to build a career. And yet here I am sitting in my dressing room in Symphony Hall, right? And so I think part of what is built into my DNA falls naturally into this new title, this new position, and also this mission now of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. That's just basically getting a person who's always believed it all his life and therefore will bring all of his heart and all of his commitment to it.
So for a young person who's growing up in the Boston schools now, what's your hope for their experience of music in this?
Well, first of all, I want them to understand that the BSO is theirs. I want them to drive by this building and know what happens in this building. And I want them to understand that all of those things, what happens in this building and who comes into this building, belongs to them. And that the composers that they get to hear, even if the composer has been dead for 150 years, still wrote with their best life in their intentions, in the composer's intentions. And so at the end of the day, I want a child to just believe something different and better about themselves and about their possibilities.
Does it make a difference to you whether you are conducting, you know, Mahler for a grand, you know, for a lot of people paying high prices for tickets, as opposed to conducting portions of things for young people?
Can I tell you that the experience is exactly the same? I have exactly the same amount of fun. I bring the exact same degree of integrity and seriousness to it and importance to it. It's just that the venue is different and the audience is different. But I don't, for example, talk to children as if they're children. I talk to them as if they're colleagues, because children know when they're being condescended to. And so that means that right from the start, nothing's different about the atmosphere or about the space or about the flavor of the event. The other thing is that I may use different words to explain something, but I'm still using words as I am with grown-ups, that has something to do with their everyday lives. So for me, the experience is exactly the same. And guess what? Even if it's a kid who's never heard music before and they're here with their fifth grade class, this goes back to your earlier question, if we really believe in the transformative power of music, why would we want to leave anybody behind just because they're in the fourth grade?
I can't imagine what the answer, those are the very moments in your life when you're being formed, and to be able to see art, you know, and hear. Right.
And the other thing too is that this represents some of the greatest achievements of humankind. Like any medical advancement or any agricultural improvement, this thing called music. And good Lord, what a gift to be able to give that to a young person. And here's the thing that they also don't get to see, what real passion looks like. Real, devoted, energetic passion looks like. They know what screaming on the sideline looks like, but they don't know what passion looks like. And when they see it, they know that they know they're looking at something different. And maybe that was what got me, was this conductor's involvement with this incredible sound that I was hearing. Maybe that was part of it. But to be able to give that gift of powerful music and that gift of what dedication and passion looks like away to a fourth grader is phenomenal.
Do you have the kids participate in various ways, or are you just encouraging them to go out and learn an instrument, or is it, there's probably a broad range, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, in the program itself, they're all used to it now, but when I first got here, they were kind of shocked that I'd actually leave the stage and talk from the audience. They're shocked that I actually make contact with kids and I talk to them right to their face, not talking over the tops of their heads as they say you should do sometimes when you're making a speech. No, I'm talking to them, and they're becoming my friends, and we're going on this journey together. And so when I talk to them about how to apply what you have just heard in the last 45 minutes to your everyday lives, it has real meaning. Sometimes I make a musical reference, you know, learn that scale that you're having such a hard time with, or don't give up trying to learn how to ride a bike without training wheels. I mean, it could be all kinds of things, but there's always a call to action, I guess is a good way to put it, of some sort on all of our youth programs.
Yes, because it seems like you could just go and do performances in schools or do performances in Symphony Hall for masses of kids and not particularly get them engaged.
Yeah. And yeah, if you don't create a relationship, you may as well be in there selling insurance. And there's nothing wrong with selling insurance, by the way, especially in this city, right? But the point is, If you're not in the business of creating relationships and using this music as the vehicle that gets you there, then you've done everybody a disservice. So for me, there's an invitation to dream and there's a call to action, but there is also, I leave them over and over and over again with the notion that both are required, both the dreaming and the action. And I tell them that wishing without working only leads to disappointment.
Tell me about, how does it differ the two kinds of teaching that you do? You teach young conductors, aspiring young professional conductors, and then you're also working with very young kids who are just being introduced to music.
Yeah. Well, as I say, they both take a different set of muscles. With the young conductors and the young orchestral musicians at the Jacobs School, they are closer to the level of understanding and the level of aesthetic ability, they are closer to the age of the players of the level of the Boston Symphony Orchestra than they are, a fourth grader picking up a violin, which I have taught also. And so the words that you use and the kinds of meanings that you're trying to convey are a little more sophisticated with the older group of people. And with the conductors, there's a whole added department, if you will, of teaching, and that is, I'm also training future leaders, not just people who can wave their arms. And the thing that I am constantly reminding them of is you have to understand that conductors are first and foremost leaders of men and women who happen to be musicians. And so leadership is a lot more than being able to conduct a 4/4 bar the right way. And so that's another dimension that gets added there in that teaching. As well as teaching them how to get their first job. You know, they see conductors either at my level or Andres's level or whatever, and that's what they aspire to, because we all aspire to that. But their first job is going to be learning how to talk to a fourth grader and learning how to do a Parks concert and a Pops concert and how to talk to an audience. And so that's another segment. So all of those muscles get thrown into the mix when I'm teaching those students. With the young kids, it's not even exhausting. It's only exhausting because I exhaust myself having so much fun with them. But to your question, obviously, if I use big words with them, it means I'm teaching them a big word. If I use big words with a college kid, I'm using it for some sort of descriptive purpose.
Well, Thomas Wilkins, thank you so much, and congratulations on this new appointment, this new kind of added responsibility and added amazing work that you get to do here with the community and the kids. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.